Hello, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. Today, with the prospect of warmer spring ever closer, we charge into the weekly radio chat room known as Spectrum West. We're on this April morning. We welcome Sean Carey. Yes, a member of the award-winning group Bon Iver, but also a heck of a songwriter and band leader in his own right. His group, S. Carey, just released a second album, and they're making their way back this way on a three-week tour that ends in Eau Claire, where Mr. Carey and his family resides, by the way, and where he received so much of the musical training crescendoing in his career at the moment. We're going to talk with Steve Carlson, coordinator of what is now the 6th annual Piano Festival coming to the Shell Lake Arts Center next Saturday, where young talent congregates and grows. And then there's Jim Oliver, who continues to deliver in large and generous ways. For the record, he volunteers his time to follow and engage with authors, playwrights, actors, and directors, then shares his conversations with all of us. My consistent hope is that Jim realizes how much his involvement is appreciated here on Spectrum West. Speaking of involvement, today, in addition to what's on stage in Western Wisconsin, Jim has tracked down at least a couple of the theatrical productions we're about to enjoy in Western Wisconsin. And here is the first.
UW Eau Claire's Music and Theater Arts Department will present its production of Skyline, opening tonight and running through Saturday, and then the following Wednesday through Sunday. All showings will be held at the Riverside Theater of the Haas Fine Arts Center. The play was written and directed by F. Reed Brown, Assistant Professor of Theater Arts. Professor Brown joins us to talk about his play. Well, thank you for being with us, and why don't you just tell us about Skyline?
Skyline is a play that I began many years ago and then sat it on a shelf for quite some time, and then returned to it this past year. I was able to get a student-faculty collaborative grant with a couple of students here at UWEC to act as my dramaturgs, and we started hashing out the script, and we finalized it right at the end of the summer. So this is its premiere. It's never been done before.
You threw in a term there that was not familiar to me, or perhaps I misunderstood. You talked about the students. What did you call them?
Dramaturgs, it's a position where they do research for a playwright to make sure that facts are correct, and they also, quite honestly, bounce ideas back and forth for a writer, so a writer's not working solely in a vacuum. There are professional dramaturgs out there that will do research for a playwright if they want to get time period right or if they want to get facts right. But also, they are not co-writers necessarily, but they're someone to just bounce ideas off of.
I was reading the advanced material that came out about it. Sounds fascinating. Sounds like something I'd really like to dig into. So where does it start? Where does it end?
Well, the idea came to me after 9/11, after the Twin Towers came down. I saw in the New York Times that some Arnhem tribesmen from Australia, Aboriginal Australians, traveled to Ground Zero to do a cleansing ritual of what was then considered to be sacred ground by many. And coincidentally, 2 weeks prior to that, I had gone to New York and slept in Central Park in order to get tickets to see Meryl Streep and Kevin Kline and Philip Seymour Hoffman and Natalie Portman, quite an all-star cast. They were doing The Seagull at Shakespeare in the Park. And then within the 2 weeks after when the Twin Towers fell, it dawned on me how seemingly insignificant theater seemed at that time, how unimportant it was given the gravity of the events that had taken place. So when I saw this notice that these Aboriginal Australians came all the way halfway around the world, it started to dawn on me that what is important at any given time really changes due to personal things in one's life and then political things that are going on. So I started thinking about this script, and I worked on it for some time, and as I said, I put it away, but it's basically about a time-traveling Aborigine named Olulu who is in Australia in the 1850s when Edwin Booth and Laura Keene went to then Australia to do Shakespeare, Edwin Booth at that time being the most famous actor of his age, mm-hmm. and then also turning up in New York post 9/11. So I had to research Dreamtime, the Aboriginal concept of Tjikirpa, the Dreamtime, which is a worldview that we in the Western Hemisphere don't really grasp. And so that's how the whole thing got started. And before I knew it, I had a full-length play going around in my head about a time traveler who was there at the Lincoln assassination and as well got to New York after Ground Zero. So
how big of a cast do you have?
It's a cast of 12, and they really run the gamut. We have a number of actors of color, which was really important to me. It's also part of the Year of Inclusivity project that's going on currently at UWEC. The Music and Theater Arts program is trying to personify art devoted to underrepresented populations, and this play sort of fit perfectly.
Now, you said you had some students involved in the actual writing of the play. How about the production other than the actors? Are there other students involved?
Absolutely. Both of my designers are student designers. The scenic designer and lighting designer are students here working with a mentor. The costume designer is our costume design professor, Amanda Profaser. It's been a wonderful collaborative team that I've had an opportunity to work with.
Well, we've been visiting with Professor Reed Brown, author and director of the UW Eau Claire Theater production of Skyline. The show runs through Saturday and next Thursday through Sunday at the Riverside Theater of the Haas Fine Arts Center at the University. Tickets are available at the UWEC Service Center in the Davie Center, or you can call 715-836-3727. Reed Brown, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Now, as intrigued as Jim was about the term dramaturg, so was I. Now, it's sometimes pronounced dramaturge, sometimes spelled drama and then T-U-R-G or drama T-U-R-G-E. I thought I was nicely seasoned, but it appears I have some missing vocabularian teeth, I guess. The literal definition of dramaturg or turge is a literary advisor on the staff of a theater, film corporation, etc., whose responsibilities may include selection and editing of texts, liaison with authors, preparation of printed programs, public relations work, and more. Did you know there's even a group, Literary Managers and Dramaturgs of the Americas, LMDA? The art, by the way, is dramaturgy, and the adjective is dramaturgical. As Mr. Brown said, there are freelance dramaturgs, professional dramaturges, and, man, see? You learn something new every day. And today is done. I've got it in. Spectrum Memo, tonight, Thursday night, UW Eau Claire's Priory Speaker Series features discussion and a book signing that features a new book by Dr. Matt Waters, UWEC Professor of Classics and Ancient History. The book is Ancient Persia, Concise History, and the Achaemenid Empire. It's this evening at 6:30 in the Alumni Room of Davies Center. Reminder, the Chippewa Valley Youth Symphony is auditioning young musicians for next season on April 27th, the 29th, and May 1st. That's at Haas Fine Arts Center on the UWEC campus. Details at cvyouthsymphony.org. So if you already knew what a dramaturg was, I'm sorry for the redundancy, but if you didn't, you're welcome, and have fun impressing your friends. I know I will. Now all I have to do is make some. Well, you know, in about a week, the Shell Lake Arts Center comes alive again with the 6th Annual Piano Festival, a jam-packed day of learning and listening. Steve Carlson, a piano tech extraordinaire in that neck of the woods, is coordinator of the program, and he joined us by telephone. Well, before we dive into the piano festival, talk a bit, if you would please, about sharing the music. I was reading about that. It sounds like something worthwhile for folks to consider.
Well, it's an interesting program. I didn't come really prepared to talk about it, but since I initiated, I can tell you about it.
Yes, I knew that.
a few years ago, I decided it would be... We found some people that were willing to donate used pianos to the Art Center, and I would recondition them, and we would then place them in places where people would have a need for a piano but maybe did not have the ability to buy one. So that's how it started out. It was started out in a kind of disorganized way, and initially we had about five pianos that we placed down in the Mississippi area after I worked on them following Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, wow.
Following that, we have placed them in a variety of areas. We placed one in through the Lions Club, which has a mission down in Mexico every year. We placed one in an orphanage in Mexico. We placed one in a childhood education center in Spooner. We placed a couple of nursing homes. We placed a couple in some Bible camps that offered free camping experiences to people. We placed one in the Park Theater, which is up in Hayward, kind of a small theater that provides music experiences off and on.
Mm-hmm.
We've put, I'm trying to think where else. We've processed about 20 pianos, and we probably placed about 18, and I have two more that are ready to go at the present time. So,
oh, what a great idea.
It works well, and it's worked well for me, and usually I go out, and I had a guy just call me the other day, wanted to donate a piano, an old full upright piano, and he sent me an email, a picture that looked pretty nice. He said it came from a university that they got rid of it, and he's had it for a few years, and now they're moving and they need to get rid of it. So I will go and take a look at it, and if I can put less than 40 hours of work reconditioning it to make it usable, we will accept it and bring it to my shop, and I'll work on it over a period of time. And then we have a lady who works on trying to place these things. So.
Wow. So someone's listening and they have an old piano. How do they donate it?
They can just call me. My home number and my business number are the same, at 715-468-2205.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about it, or they can email me at stephen332@centurytel.net, or they can contact the Art Center.
Okay. And you are the proprietor of Keyboard Crafts in Shore
Lake. Right, it's
so
a single proprietorship, small, part-time business.
Yeah, sole proprietorship.
Right, it's convenient. It's getting a little out of control right now, but I'm hoping to kind of get it back in control later on.
When you're working on pianos, it's not S-O-L-E proprietorship, it's S-O-U-L.
Yeah. And there aren't a lot of, there are hardly any other piano technicians in the area. There's one south of Rice Lake, and there's one in Frederick, and there's nobody in Spooner, and there's nobody in Hayward. So it's we could use some more piano technicians in the area.
Pianos need TLC.
They do.
The 6th Annual Piano Festival coming to the Shell Lake Art Center Saturday the 26th, featuring Nick Phillips. Now, if we were speaking formally, it would be Dr. Nicholas Phillips. He's the man this year. He's going to be putting on some master classes. He's been on this program a few times. He's been doing some recording. What's a master class like, Steve?
Well, I can tell you a little bit. You can find a kind of a detailed explanation of that if you go to the Shell Lake Arts Center, .org website, and you go to the homepage, and down the right side there's a navigation column, and you go down to 6th Annual Piano Festival. And you will get a part of that will show what a master class is. But basically, it's this. Each of the master classes will consist of a pre-selected student who's prepared a piece to the best of their ability. And these are usually pretty high-quality students.
Mm-hmm.
They will perform this piece in our concert hall in front of Nick Phillips, who will then help them refine their technique and their musicianship over the course of a half an hour. That's great for the student who's playing, but also we encourage people to come sit close to the piano and watch the whole teaching experience, and they can learn a lot from this master class about their own piano performance or piano teaching techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Master classes are often used as a teaching method in university settings. So if anybody is thinking of going on for advanced teaching in the music department of the university, it's really worthwhile for them to come and see what a master class is really like.
Sure. This year's evening guest performance is Alex Sandor. He's best known, as I read, for his ragtime abilities, but he's listed for this as a classical pianist, so he's got a lot of ability.
he has a lot of ability. I actually personally take piano lessons from him.
Wow.
Once a month I travel up to Superior. He loves classical music, and that's probably maybe his main love. He's an extremely talented classical music player. He's played with the Duluth Symphony. Mm-hmm. But throughout the nation, he's noted as a premier ragtime player.
Then he has a collaborative chamber music performance with a flautist as well.
Correct.
Melanie Seaver. Where's Melanie from?
Melanie's from the UW-Superior also.
Okay.
And they have worked together. They actually just recently performed a recital concert up at UW-Superior, which received rave reviews.
On the phone with us, Steve Carlson. He's program director for the 6th Annual Piano Festival at the Shell Lake Arts Center coming Saturday the 26th. Continuing on that concert evening, there's a special pre-concert recital, and that's by select masterclass participants of whom we spoke?
Correct.
If you have a young pianist in your household out there, or you know of someone who would benefit from an entertaining and intense day of music, is this a good idea?
I think it's excellent. The whole afternoon, which consists of 5 master classes, consists of some technical demonstrations of how the piano works, consists of some piano pedagogy techniques for piano teachers, consists of a lecture by Dr. Phillips entitled Working with Living Composers. All of that in the afternoon is totally free.
Yeah, that is so cool. I mean, I have the word free here on my notes, and it's bold. I bolded it because that doesn't happen very often.
No, the Shell Lake Arts Center is basically an educational institution, and this is part of our educational mission. But also, so rarely do we have any classical music performances in the area that we thought we could combine this together.
Mm-hmm. And the concert is at 7:30. There is a nominal admission fee for that because you got to help balance the books.
We tried to keep the fees, the ticket prices really low. We're encouraging anybody 11 or under to come for free, so we want people to bring their children. And then there's a $5 fee for students age 12 to 17 and just a $10 ticket charge for adults. And I don't think you'll find another place where you can see a program like this for $10.
No kidding. Are you, Steve, the father of this piano festival, or did you dive in somewhere along the way?
Well, I initially started it. It's modeled on an international keyboard festival in Michigan called the Gilmore International Keyboard Festival. They have an event like this every other year, and they have multiple master classes and multiple professional performances. I have a brother-in-law who lives there, so I go and visit him every year for that, or every other year for that. And I looked at that and I said, you know, we could take this idea and apply it in a reduced manner to our area, and we could support classical piano education and performances.
You're one of the people up there who I'm sure realizes their good fortune at having something like the Shell Lake Arts Center in your midst. Too bad there are other people who have it in their own backyard and they haven't discovered it yet. Those are the people that you're probably going to want to encourage to get to know it, because once they do, they'll be back.
It's a marvelous place, and the summer program is a marvelous variety of all sorts of arts, between jazz and music theater and movie making, and it's this is one of the reasons that my wife and I moved to Shell Lake in 1976, because it was here.
And you've been there a while.
Right. I'm an old man.
So you're enjoying it.
I am enjoying it thoroughly.
Obviously. One of the perks of doing a program like Spectrum West is I get to meet a lot of interesting people, and some of the most interesting have had to do with pianos. You're about the third person that I've talked to that works on pianos. And how does a person get into that? Let's say you're a young person and you say, I don't know what I'm going to do the rest of my life. That could be a good living, couldn't it?
It certainly could be. And there are 5 or 6 schools of piano technology distributed throughout the United States that, with a 1-year course of study, you can end up being a certified registered piano technician.
Hmm.
The tuition generally runs, I think, somewhere in the $15,000 to $16,000 range. And it's hard to find a place where you can learn a skill like that that's quite remunerative at that price and with that limited amount of time.
Especially if you get, if you're restoring some pianos, it can do well.
It can do very well.
All right, Steve, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it. Keep up the great work, and we're looking forward to the 7th annual.
It's a pleasure to talk to you again, Al.
Back to the Sharing the Music program. If you have an old piano or know of someone who does, Steve Carlson's number again is 715-468-2201. 3325. And email, again, is stephen332@centurytel.net.
Support for WPR comes from the Water Street Deli in Eau Claire. The deli will reopen May 7th. Fresh hummus, baba ganoush, and pita chips are still available at the Downtown Farmers Market and Just Local Food on Facebook and at waterstreetdeliandgrocery.com.
This is Spectrum West for the 17th of April. I'm Al Ross. Nice to have you along. Thanks.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. UW-Eau Claire's Music and Theater Arts Department will present its production of Skyline through Saturday at the Riverside Theater of the Haas Fine Arts Center at the University. Simon of Cyrene, a Passion of the Christ production of Community Arts of Fall Creek, plays through Friday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The Fox on the Fairway plays Friday through Sunday at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The show will run through May 4th. That Love and Feelin', the story of the Righteous Brothers, will play Friday and Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson, Fridays and Saturdays and selected Sundays through August 14th. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
I probably don't have to define the name Sean Carey here where we live, but for those needing a refresher, suffice it to say he's a percussionist and vocalist in the Grammy Award-winning Bon Iver and holder of a BA in music from UW-Eau Claire. While touring with Justin Vernon and friends, Sean developed ambition for songwriting and has proven to have the stuff that generates memorable listening. His first recorded venture, All We Grow, came out 4 years ago, and 17 days ago, his second compilation, Range of Light, was released. Right now, he and his bandmates, cumulatively known as S. Carey, are on the road enjoying a three-week tour to introduce the new music. The tour culminates with a trip home to Schofield Auditorium at UWEC for an April 26th concert. Sean Carey joined me on the phone just the other day. Well, you know, I have to tell you that you not only broadened my musical horizon, but you enhanced my vocabulary, because I've never used the word beatific before. In fact, it caused me to look it up, and in doing so, I discovered another word I've never used before, tenebrific. Do you know what that means?
Tenebrific. Has something to do with Canterbury Tales?
Tenebrific means causing gloom or darkness. So that's the opposite of beatific. Go figure.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so thanks for that. Okay, so now we have to talk about what beatific means for those who are possibly in the same boat as me, and that is that beatific sort of, you know, we've heard the word beatitude, hopefully. It projects a peaceful sense of joy. Is beatific the way you feel when you're writing and playing, and thus that's how you'd like others to feel?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I mean, I guess my songs are kind of about a bunch of different things. So sometimes joyful, but sometimes not as joyful. But I think the sounds that I'm going for have a very pleasant and pretty sounds, and they conjure up pretty images. And that's kind of one of the main things that I'm going for, is just to make beautiful music, you know.
Mm-hmm. I think you're succeeding. Congratulations on it, by the way. It's wonderful stuff.
Thanks.
It's the kind of music that one can get lost in.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Another word that I saw associated with describing your music, or in describing you or the feel, is the word panorama. That, as I listened to your music, also made me feel like I was in front of a panorama. You use the word going for in your last answer. When you're going for a certain sound, does it take you a while to get there, or do you know that you're there when you're there?
It all depends, I think. Sometimes it just happens very, very quickly, and other times you kind of have to do trial and error and figure out what different sounds work together. Mm-hmm. And what the song really needs.
Are you an experimenter in that sense?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
A lot of people go into studios to record hundreds and probably thousands of songs each year, maybe each day, and we have access to much of it given our amazing ability to communicate. Is it important for a writer and a performer that his music not get lost on this crowded freeway I was just describing? Do you write for the crowd, or do you simply drive the music vehicle that you own and you just hope that people notice it?
Yeah, that's a tough one because, I mean, I think in theory I would like to be not thinking about my audience, but I think it's really hard to do that. And so I'd probably be lying if I said that I didn't have some sort of idea about trying to make music that people are going to like and that people are going to be drawn to. But I think you kind of have to walk the line of creating music that is going to be successful, people are going to like, but also making sure that you're doing your own thing and that you're staying true to your aesthetic.
Does the music of S. Cary appeal only to a certain audience, do you think? Or do you think that it's one of those things that, given the opportunity to hear it, that audience should and will grow?
I think it kind of has potential for a broader audience, honestly, because, it's not, I wouldn't call it trendy, really. I don't think that there's a certain hip audience that thinks it's super cool or anything. I just think that it's a lot of different people from different places and different age groups and different backgrounds can all enjoy it.
The city's fire, trapped behind the earth, digging in your deepest dirt.
No, I think, given that analogy I used a while ago about a freeway, I mean, it does stand out, and I think it stands out in all good ways, because I think people, this is good stuff. I don't, I can take a lot of this stuff. I suppose that's good, huh? You know, the more they can take, the better off you are.
Interesting
that you have ties to the Sierra Nevada and Yosemite. Got to tell you just a quick story. A couple of years ago, I did a solo trip from San Francisco to Las Vegas, and I spent a couple of days in Yosemite. And after listening to and watching the video of things like Crown the Pines, your song, I was mentally, literally transported back there, remembering the time that I took to leaf through prints and books of Ansel Adams while I was there.
Yeah, exactly.
I was standing in awe there, I mean, above and at the bottom of the valley. So nice job in capturing that spirit. I'm certain John Muir would love it.
Cool. Thank you.
So,
that's awesome. Yeah, that's just a place that I went to. I went to Yosemite a couple times as a kid, and then we went to other places in the Sierras too, where we would just go every summer and have family reunions, because I have a bunch of cousins and aunts and uncles that live in California. So it just seemed like a great place to go and camp and hike around. And so, yeah, I kind of wanted to go back through some of those memories and write about them in this group of songs.
Mm-hmm. Are you aware of a new age guy named David Arkenstone?
No, not at all.
He came out in the 1980s. And his music, when I first heard it, and I just totally fell in love with it and started scooping up as much of it as I could, his music reminded me or made me feel or it made me empathize with the first guy, whoever made the first music, and sort of probably teared up and went, wow, this has got a future. You know, in other words, it was so new and so fresh. That's what yours reminded me of, David Arkenstone. Look him up.
Oh, I will.
I read that your life continues to evolve with marriage and fatherhood, among other new elements. Do you find your music getting more involved with the addition of new experiences?
I think it's changing. I think, you know, with this record, some of the songs are about my childhood and about the wilderness and all that. But then there are a couple that are definitely about starting a family. And, I think my songwriting is always sort of changing. And I think when you have that different perspective of being a dad and all the changes that go with that, I think that it's just a different feel. I think you can have different new perspectives when it comes to songwriting that maybe you didn't have before.
It's a warm feeling. Your foundation, I think, gets bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It might even make it easier to write, do you think?
Maybe, yeah. It's definitely, I think it's easier for me to kind of just not overthink it and just kind of maybe just have more clarity, more honesty or something in the writing.
Mm-hmm. That's a good word. That's a good word to use in your music, clarity, because I think that that's what people feel. That clarity, it's like opening a window. It's like fresh air. It's I think people will feel a lot of different things. And maybe that's the cool part of your music, is that everybody will interpret it in a different way.
Yeah, totally.
Another title that you chose for a song is Chrysalis. And I remember years ago, that used to be a record label. And I remember how impressed I was with the imagery that portrayed, because that really is how an idea or an emotion or an encounter becomes a song. It takes time. It can't be rushed. It's very natural.
That song's about my baby and the start of that part of my life, I guess.
So. Oh, cool. So, with your music backed by so much meaning, do you think it's going to be a while before you write and record another chapter, because it simply takes time for life to happen, or are you always writing?
I got a couple of new song ideas, but it'll definitely be a while before those come to fruition. But yeah, I guess I'm gonna always going through periods of creativity, whether it's in my head, which it is kind of right now, or whether I'm more proactive about it and actually writing and recording.
Tell me about the S. Carey musical aggregation that's coming and is on the road now, actually, and is coming to Eau Claire, coming home on the 26th of April. Tell me about the group that's going to be assembled.
Yes, there's five of us, and it's all guys that played on the record, and my band was very, very involved in the recording process, and we got a lot of instruments, and we all try to do double or triple duty on different instruments, and there's a lot of percussion and keyboards and guitar and bass and a lot of different sounds that we can do and textures that we can play with. And I'm really excited to be playing in Eau Claire, and I'm glad it's at the end of the tour, so we'll be a well-oiled machine by then. But the shows are going well, and I love playing with these guys, and they're my best friends, and we have a lot of fun, and they're all great musicians, and they fit in with my aesthetic really well, and they all bring a lot to the table, so definitely an exciting thing.
A word about your music education at UW Eau Claire. I mean, almost every week I turn a corner and there's someone out there who has been educated at UW Eau Claire. And I understand, having talked to several guys and gals involved in it, percussion is quite a proud department, if you can call it that, at UW Eau Claire.
Yeah, there's a lot of good drummers and percussionists that live in Eau Claire and that go to school there and went to school there. And I think my training definitely influenced my writing style and definitely kind of shaped what S. Carey has become. And I guess that's what you get when a drummer turns songwriter. But I think some of our songs sound like a percussion ensemble or a chamber ensemble, and that's kind of another thing, like I said, that I'm going for, I guess, is combining those worlds with the folk or pop world, trying to put those kind of colors and textures into a four-minute song. So I think that training definitely affected my writing. We'll be right back. one of the cool things about this record is that there aren't really like a one or two tracks that stick out to me. When we were trying to pick which songs we were going to focus on, it was kind of hard because it could have gone a few different ways.
Tell me a little bit about White Hinterland.
So White Hinterland is one person. Her name is Casey, and she's from Boston, and we've known her for a while, actually, mm-hmm. because she toured with us on our very first tour with Bon Iver, and then she's also toured with S. Carey before, too. Happened to be putting out a record on the same day that we did. So she has a whole new album, and it's really cool, and I actually played a little bit on it. She's a one-man band and one-woman band. It's electronic, kind of R&B, pop, and it's really good, and her live show is really captivating. Hoping that Clarions can come check her out.
You're in Pennsylvania now. Where are you going between now and then?
We're
going
to be heading north. We're playing New York, and then Boston, and then Montreal, Toronto, and then we come back into the Midwest and at home.
I won't take any more of your day. I appreciate you taking as much time as you did. It's wonderful talking to all this talent. It's a lot of fun, and it sounds like you're having a lot of fun as well.
I am. Yep, thanks for the call.
Take care. Sean Carey, new album is Range of Light. S. Carey, on tour, coming home to Eau Claire next Saturday. Schofield Auditorium, UWEC.
Support for WPR comes from Merchants Bank in Eau Claire, thanking residents of the Chippewa Valley for their support in welcoming the Merchants brand to Mall Drive. Come grow with us. More at merchantsbank.com.
Having a good time on Spectrum West on this Thursday morning. You could be listening on Friday evening. And thanks for doing it both times. I'm Al Ross. I've seen next week's forecast. It's looking pretty good. Maybe these 30s and 40s are behind us. Okay, now that I said that, we're doomed. A couple things from the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild. They're looking for applications for their annual scholarship program to be awarded to either a high school senior pursuing music or theater in college or a college student continuing in music or theater. They're also seeking a director for the Golden Trunk Players, the volunteer high school troupe that performs for young kids at libraries, daycares, community events, and churches. It's a summer job. Pays pretty good money. But you got to apply by Friday. That's tomorrow or today, depending on when you're listening to us. Details at cvtg.org. The UW River Falls Dance Theater is hosting a Zumbathon charity fundraiser in the Center Gymnasium. 4 p.m. next Wednesday. Y'all are invited. Proceeds are going to Turning Point, a nonprofit that assists victims of domestic and sexual violence. UW River Falls Theater presents Kwaidan, Strange Tales from East Asia, April 24th through 26th and May 1st through 3rd at 7:30 p.m. in the Kleinpel Fine Arts Building. Information at the box office. Here's the phone number, 425-3114, also available online. Spectrum West continues. Guess what? Jim Oliver is back, and there's another theater opening night he'd like to tell you about.
Simon of Cyrene, the latest in a series of musical plays centered around the Passion of Christ and written and produced by Karen Hurd of Community Arts of Fall Creek, will open tonight at the State Theater in Eau Claire. And the show continues with two performances on Friday. Joining us to talk about Simon of Cyrene is Karen Hurd, the playwright and the producer and the director. You don't also sweep out the theater when the show is over, do you? It seems like you're doing practically everything with this.
No, I'm not doing practically everything. There are over 90 people involved helping me do this show.
Okay. Anyway, Simon of Cyrene is somewhat better known than Procula, the wife of Pontius Pilate, who was the focus of last year's production, but he's only mentioned in the Synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, but not John. So tell us, who was Simon of Cyrene?
Simon of Cyrene was a Jewish man that lived in Cyrene, which is in northern Africa. there was at that time a huge Jewish settlement, one of the most ancient Jewish settlements that we have. There were oftentimes pilgrims. The Jewish people would go to Jerusalem for the Passover. That was we hear it nowadays. We say when Jewish people celebrate the Passover, they say next year in Jerusalem. Well, that was the attitude at that time, too, that they would want to celebrate the Passover in the holy city of Jerusalem. So Simon of Cyrene was going to make that trek.
How did he become famous?
He became famous because he happened to be what maybe he thought was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was there in the holy city at the time where they were having a criminal trial and crucifixion of the man Jesus, who claimed to be the Son of God, the Messiah. He happened to be right there at the roadside when Jesus was carrying his cross up to the hill of the skull where he was to be crucified. And Jesus fell, passing as Simon of Cyrene. The Roman soldier looked around and needed to grab someone to carry the cross for Christ, because obviously Jesus was not able to carry it on his own. And so the problem that the Roman soldier had is that they were to be respectful of the Jewish mandate. The Jewish people were to be clean for the Passover, and anyone that had blood on them would be unclean for this holy celebration. So he's looking for a foreigner, someone that was non-Jewish, that he could say, hey, you, pick up the cross. Well, Simon of Cyrene obviously looked like a foreigner because he was wearing his North African clothes. This is my assumption, okay? He somehow had to look different so that the Roman soldier said, hey, you, pick up this cross and carry it. And so that's how Simon of Cyrene became famous, is because he was chosen to carry that cross the last little bit up the hill.
Now, you've picked out some less familiar names in the past to write your plays about, so why did you set on Simon of Cyrene this time?
I wanted to look at it from a different perspective. You know, we have looked at it from the eyes of a Roman governor's wife that was Procula, and have looked at it from the eyes of the prophets that foretold Christ, from the eyes of the angels. And I wanted to look at a Jewish person who didn't live in the area of Jerusalem and how he just happened to be there. One of the themes of my play is that there is no such thing as coincidence. It was not a coincidence that Simon of Cyrene was in Jerusalem at the time of the crucifixion and Jesus fell down in front of him. There was a reason. Simon was not a believer. He probably didn't think that Jesus was the Messiah, but it was a life-changing event. We have recorded also in the scripture that his sons, Rufus and Alexander, became leaders in the Christian church, Rufus especially in Rome later on. So we assume that Simon at some point became a Christian after the crucifixion of Christ.
Uh-huh. So is the music original, or is this something you...
The music is not original. I purchased the performance rights and the music from Brentwood Benson as a company in Tennessee in the Nashville area. There's so much Easter music written, I don't need to write any of it.
One wouldn't think so, no.
Yeah, there's so much that's already there. So much wonderful, wonderful music. When I do something like Robin Hood or Beowulf or King Arthur, nobody's written any music for that. We do the writing of that.
Okay.
But for this, no, I've purchased it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a rather large cast, I assume, considering your history.
I do. With the cast, the orchestra, the text, I mean, there's a lot of people involved to pull a show off this size. There are over 90 of us involved.
Now, is there choreography as well as vocal music? Or?
Yes, there is. There is choreography. Of course, the children have three numbers that they do, three songs that they do, and they are part of the action. The songs carry on the plot. You know, when you see a show and then you know already the lines and then the song says the same thing that the line said, no, I'm never like that. So you have to listen to the words of the song to see where the rest of the plot is going.
Uh-huh.
Because we're not repeating that. People don't say that in their lines, so you're listening to the words. And so the children are a part of this, and they do their choreography. They have three songs. And then we have, there's a total of 16 songs altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So the children have some, the adult choir has some, and then there's Simon's family. Simon sings the solo, and there's choreography for an angel dancer, some angels, very interesting choreography. You've got to come see that. You've got to come just to see the ship that Simon has to sail on, a ship.
Oh, my goodness.
To Jerusalem. He either took, it's 900 miles to go overland, and so we don't know for sure if he went overland or if he went by sea, but most likely he took a ship and sailed from northern Africa to the eastern coast there of the of the by the Holy Land. The Holy Land's a little bit further east than the coast, but anyway, and then walked overland to get to Jerusalem.
Karen Hurd, who is the playwright, the producer, and director of Simon of Cyrene, the latest in a series of musical plays centered around the Passion of Christ for Community Arts of Fall Creek. The play opens tonight and continues with performances at 3 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. Friday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. Karen Hurd, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Spectrum West, Jim Oliver, thank you. Hey, next week is Earth Week. It's a big deal at UW Eau Claire and other universities and locations all over West Wisconsin. On the UWEC campus, it's Bike to Campus Week. Temperatures look good for that. Cooking classes, an art gala, an Earth Week film, outdoor concert, and more. Next Wednesday, by the way, well-known activist, scholar, and author Angela Davis visits UW Eau Claire Schofield Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. The topic is how gender, race, and socioeconomic status define equality for all. Well, you know, in order for a program as broad-shouldered as Spectrum West, we must be able to cover West and Northwest Wisconsin. And for that, we need the help and cooperation of countless individuals and groups, people who keep us abreast of what's going on in their neighborhoods and communities, artists and musicians who have us in the loop concerning their newest endeavors, and people like you who know of or notice something interesting, entertaining, or unique and are nice enough to let us know about it. That's the way Spectrum West stays vibrant, fresh, thought-provoking, and comprehensive. So thanks for staying in touch, and thanks for keeping us in mind as you live your remarkable lives. Had fun today. Hope you did too. Next week, we celebrate Poetry Month in a big way. You'll find out how. Chippewa Falls hosts a big art fair, and a very young author makes her debut, and more. Always more. As you know, on Spectrum West, I'm Al Ross. Have yourself a good Thursday, a good Friday, a good weekend, and we'll see you next week. Thanks.